Blog Talk Radio.
Matchup between Alabama and Clemson for the national title game. We will be joined by my buddy John Kelly, the only Alabama fan I know, in about 4 minutes, where he will explain his thoughts on tonight's football game. That interview comes up at 6:05 Eastern. We are on Blog Talk Radio, the Golf News Radio Network, and iTunes. Search Teeing It Up for all archive episodes going back to 2011. A lot of good stuff in there. Speaking of good stuff, Jordan Spieth put together a lot of good stuff in his round of golf on Sunday, yesterday, in winning the Hyundai Tournament of Champions by 8. He becomes the second person in the ShotLink era, which goes back to 2004, to lead the field in both strokes gained tee to green and strokes gained putting. I'm pretty sure unless you tie with somebody, it is impossible to lose an event that way. Brian Gay is the only other person who have done that feat. He did it at the RBC Heritage down there in Harbortown and Hilton Head, South Carolina. We'll be there the week after the Masters. What an impressive show of golf. Tee to green, not only in terms of shot making, especially with that three hybrid, but putting. He made so many putts of 15 feet or more, bombs, like the 35-footer on number two yesterday, that just, you know, just when you wonder how somebody will be with a large lead starting out today, he just kind of reminded you, hey, I'm here, I'm good, I'm feeling comfortable, and the rest is obviously history. He got his family there, including his sister, the heart and soul of that family, Ellie, who was proud to cheer on her brother as he got win number 7, puts him up with Tiger and Horton Smith as the youngest players to reach 7 wins in PGA Tour history. Win number 7 extends that lead on number 1 in the world, which makes sure Mr. McIlroy or Mr. Day cannot get there anytime soon. Rory plays first, then Jason Day at Torrey. And away we go now to the Sony Open. The Sony Open in Hawaii. We obviously also have the National Football League playoffs after a wacky week. It happens sometimes in the playoffs. You get weird finishes, wacky finishes, controversial finishes. The bottom line is this. Cincinnati lost their cool. They lost the football game. Blair Walsh from Minnesota obviously talked about this with Luke Morrow on Saturday on the Sunday Sprint. Unfortunately for Luke, wasn't meant to be for the Vikings. They're out. Seattle moves on now, faces Carolina in a dynamite matchup. Green Bay finally played like Green Bay, goes to Arizona, and Kansas City will get to face Denver in an AFC West matchup on Sunday on CBS. But needless to say, Houston, I think, it caught up with them not having the proper personnel. I think that's all to be said there. And Kansas City rolls, and they roll on to the divisional round. We'll have more on that Saturday, 11:30 Eastern time, on the Sunday Sprint with Luke Morrow. We are going to have John Kelly to talk Alabama football, and that comes your way in 30 seconds. This is Teeing It Up with Jeremy Schilling.
Sometimes tough isn't enough. Lou Gehrig was baseball's Iron Man, but lost it all to ALS, a muscle-wasting disease that destroyed his skills and ended his life in just a few years. MDA has been leading the fight to vanquish ALS for decades. Truly effective treatments must be found. because the battle Lou Gehrig fought is still being waged in households across America. Call 1-800-572-1717 to learn more about what MDA is doing to strike out ALS and save lives.
And on this Monday of the college football playoff national championship game, we welcome in the only Alabama football fan I know, the one, the only, John Kelly. Hello, sir.
Hey, how are you? Hopefully I'm the sanest Alabama fan.
Let me ask you this. You guys are in the midst of a dynasty, a flat-out, all-out college football dynasty that depending on how things shake out, could be one of the best, you know, top two, three dynasties of all time in college football. When this season started back in August, did you sit here thinking this is a team that should be in the national championship game?
Beginning of the year, no, to be honest. I think actually ever since A.J. McCarron graduated in 2013, the last 2 years I haven't actually felt that good about Alabama at the start of the season. And I think a lot of that comes from the quarterback position because, you know, both, you know, the last two seasons they've had new quarterbacks who it took a very long time to kind of develop into a consistent, you know, game manager. And at the beginning of the season, Jay Cover really was not the quarterback that he was, you know, on January 1st against Michigan State. So, yeah, at the beginning of the year, you know, within watching, like, the first two or three games, I felt this was probably, you know, maybe a 9-win team. But as the season kind of went on, the defense kind of figured out what they wanted to do. They became really dominant. And Cover was able to really cut down on the interceptions. All of a sudden, you know, you kind of see the light at the end of the tunnel there.
You know, this season had some ebbs and flows for you guys. This is not this isn't one of those smooth college football seasons where you kind of waltz right into the national championship game. What would you say was the low point for Alabama, and how did they turn around? What was the key move that Nick Saban made to get them to where they are tonight?
That's actually a really great question. So I think, you know, what I will say is Alabama, if we're looking at, like, their championship seasons, you know, the past three, only one of them has actually really been a smooth ride, which was 2009. And even then, you know, they had some, you know, they won games, but they were winning some very tight ones. But 2011 and 2012, both those seasons, they actually had losses they had to overcome. And I think, you know, kind of like the nadir of the season this year was definitely the Ole Miss game. You know, they were able to put up 37 points, which was great, but, you know, that offense also had five turnovers, I think two of which were in their own 20-yard line. So they kept putting their defense in really bad situations, and they ended up losing that game 43-37. There was also kind of a fluke play where Chad Kelly passed, bounced off of a player's helmet and then was caught for, you know, a 75-yard touchdown. So there was a lot of kind of, you know, mistakes on their end. There was a fluke, and, you know, the game ended up ultimately not going their way. And I think the main move that Nick Saban made that kind of changed their season occurred in that game, because prior to that game they'd been switching back and forth between two quarterbacks, between Jake Coker and a gentleman by the name of Cooper Bateman. And Bateman actually got the start in that Ole Miss game, and he was pretty dreadful in the first quarter. Threw an interception. He was 5-for-8 passing, which isn't bad. He wasn't going downfield. It was all like dinks and dunks, small stuff. And they got down pretty hefty pretty early. So they ended up making a switch at quarterback and bringing Coker in. And all of a sudden, he was forced to kind of run and gun that offense, and he didn't play particularly well. I mean, he had under a 50% completion percentage through two interceptions, but he was getting things done. He was able to lead them down the field he threw for three touchdowns. He ran for a fourth one. And from that game moving forward, you saw his confidence start to grow as he won the team over. Because ultimately, if you're going to have a successful football team, your quarterback needs to win over the other players on that roster. And I think even though they lost that game, that was a game where Saban showed some faith in a player that he really had not been showing faith in prior. And that got the rest of the team to really rally around that guy, which is really what they needed to kind of make the run that they passed.
Talking to John Kelly here about Alabama. John, did you ever expect the game against Michigan State to be as one-sided and dominant as it was?
You know, to be honest, I thought Alabama would win, and I thought they would probably beat the spread. but I didn't think they would win by 38. I think, you know, ultimately what it is Michigan State's built very similar to Alabama. So teams that run traditional traditional offenses and run kind of a very similar defense to what Saban employs at Alabama typically don't fare very well against the Crimson Tide, because essentially you have players on Alabama's roster who are staring back at something that they see in practice every day. And when you look at the players on both sides of the ball that Alabama is able to recruit year in and year out, you can't hit them with something they've seen before and beat them, just because the level of talent is just far higher on their sideline. So if you're going to beat them, you have to kind of do something different. You have to throw tricks their way. Like, you know, if you look back at, you know, Auburn in 2010, what Johnny Manziel was able to do to give them fits, you're going to need to kind of throw something like that at them. Michigan State just didn't have that. There was really nothing flashy about them. They play good defense. So I thought, you know, they'd be able to, at the very least, slow down on offense. I did it for a little while. I mean, it was, I think, 10-0 at halftime. But ultimately, you know, they kind of got worn down, which is understandable. But, yeah, I mean, I thought, you know, they'd maybe win that game by 14, but 38.
And I'm sure as a football fan that loves to scout, you looked ahead. What did you think about Clemson in their performance against Oklahoma? Was there anything because, you know, that game, especially late in the first half, could have gone either way. You know, and from probably having seen Clemson some other time during the season, what was your impressions both of that game and then that program overall as they rode themselves to be number one in the nation and now also to the national championship game?
Well, yeah, I was going to say between Clemson and Oklahoma, when you look at them, both of those teams, you know, really kind of scare me as someone who likes to, you know, pull for Alabama, mainly because the way that they're built, right? So we just talked about how Alabama excels when they play against teams that are built the way they're built. But both of those teams in that game on the, you know, on New Year's Eve, Clemson and Oklahoma, they both employ a pretty different style of offense. You know, they both have a running quarterback who likes to take chances. They're able to push the ball downfield. Ultimately, I think Clemson won that game, and they're the better team because their quarterback makes a little fewer mistakes. I've always thought Baker Mayfield was a little bit overrated. So, yeah, you know, I think from a scouting perspective, I think Clemson actually matches up very well with Alabama. You know, I think this season the only team that scored over 25 points on the Tide was Ole Miss. Ole Miss runs a pretty non-traditional offense. You know, Chad Kelly can throw, but, you know, they allow him to kind of scramble and run out of the pocket as well. And that can give your team fits, right? So I think Clemson's going to probably watch that game tape. They're going to try to employ something similar with Deshaun Watson. So, yes, I think for that reason, I think Alabama's going to have a very hard time covering the spread of that football game. I think it's going to be a pretty close one.
Talking to John Kelly about the national championship game, Derrick Henry, Heisman Trophy winner, but an absolute workhorse for you. My impression from having seen what I've seen of Alabama is that he's not sexy. He's not one of those guys that'll, you know, do 20,000 things that'll, you know, make headlines, but he's a solid running back that has been so effective in the Nick Saban, Lane Kiffin system. As somebody who watches every single down of every single game, what has made Derrick Henry so special?
Well, I think there are really two things that make him special. I'd say the first is his durability. No running back that's ever played for Nick Saban has gotten as many carries Derrick Henry got this year. And realistically, I mean, if you look at the roster, they don't have a lot behind them. They have Kenyon Drake, who's a senior, but he's really more of a scat back. He's very thin. He's not the kind of guy you can run up the middle. And they got two freshmen, who I don't think they're too comfortable giving the ball to in big situations. So Henry, they really couldn't afford to lose him, even for a few downs, right? I mean, even if he's out for one drive, that drive's going to stall. You need him in every play, every game. He was that guy. I mean, he never came out of a single game, which is just mind-blowing when you think about the injuries that we see in college football year in and year out.
Yeah.
So that's definitely a defining characteristic. And the other thing I think that helped him put together the season he's had, the fact that he's, you know, like I said, the only running back out there. You know, when you look at previous Alabama football teams, it was typically a 1-2 punch, right? You know, you go from having Eddie Lacy and T.J. Yeldon to T.J. Yeldon and Derrick Henry. Predating that, you know, you have Mark Ingram and Trent Richardson, Eddie Lacy, right? Each of those teams typically employed about a two-running back system. Even if you go back all the way back to 2008, it was Glenn Coffey who played for a while with the 49ers. He was paired with, I think there's quite a few, you know, very good players on this football team, but ultimately Derrick Henry was the only guy at running back. So the fact that, you know, they were forced to, you know, feed him the ball 40 to 50 times a game in some situations really increased his stats in a way that, you know, maybe we would have seen from Trent Richardson or maybe we would have seen from Mark Ingram if they had been given the ball that much, you know, in their kind of key seasons. But again, because, you know, they were sharing carries and Henry's not, you know, the numbers just play out differently.
Talking to John Kelly about the national championship game, Alabama-Clemson, it's that game is tonight on ESPN at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can also stream it on Watch ESPN. You are a screenwriter in parts of your life. You love writing movies. You love seeing movies. You love directing movies. You love envisioning films. That's one of your passions for people who don't know much about you. And I wonder if when you watch a game like this, everybody talks about, oh, it's a storybook ending, or, oh, my God, this is such, you know, heartbreaking, or you know, this is such an amazing story. He came from nothing, and he, you know, now caught the game-winning, you know, touchdown for the national championship. As a screenwriter, because people always say all the time, Hollywood's looking at this script. You could not even write a script better than Hollywood for this. Is that something you actually think about while watching football games or any kind of sporting event?
Oh, man. That's a great question. Yeah, I would say that the, you know, the answer is no. So, well, here, so I'll put it this way, right? So, like, writing, you know, takes a very large amount of my free time. So,
right.
You know, I'm essentially working two jobs, right?
Right.
So, you know, Saturdays in the fall when I'm able to sit down and watch college football, that's kind of a reprieve. You know, right? It's an escape from, you know, the job that I work, you know, from 9 to 5, as well as, you know, the job I work writing scripts for, you know, studios and folks, you know, after hours. So, yeah, no, I very rarely think about that. You know, every once in a while I'll see a movie that will make me kind of think about sports in a different way, right? I think a great example of that was, like, you know, another one was a movie called Woodlawn, which no one's really talking about. That's, you know, a movie about the University of Alabama and kind of how Tony Nathan was the first player to help desegregate the SEC, Bear Bryant around Alabama. And so, yeah, so I think, you know, every once in a while I'll see a movie like that, and, you know, it'll make you kind of think about, well, okay, well, what would the stories be for, you know, this team or, you know, that team, right? But in the moment when you're watching a game, I mean, you know, you watch football games too, right? I mean, you're just so invested in what's going on, you know, in that very moment and what the situations are for you to potentially be able to, you know, get that first down or, you know, kick that field goal or get a touchdown or, you know, make a key stop on fourth down. So typically when I'm watching a game, I'm actually, you know, breaking down, like, well, what would I do here? Right. So I see it much more from, like, almost like a coaching perspective than, I guess, yeah, a writing perspective. But I will say I tried to write a sports movie once. It really didn't work. I definitely have strengths and weaknesses as a writer, and the sports genre is not my genre.
All right. Now time for the most important questions I will ask you during this interview, John. First of all, what is the key from an Alabama perspective? What is the key to this game? And secondly, for Clemson, what is a weakness that they should look to exploit tonight?
That's great. So I think the for Alabama, I would say there's probably two keys to the game. The first key to the game is shutting down Deshaun Watson, right? Clemson has a very good run game, but you're not going to run on Alabama. We're talking like LSU ran for 54 yards, Florida ran for 15, Michigan State 29, even Ole Miss, they put up 43 points, they only ran for 92 yards. So you're not going to run on this football team. The way Alabama loses games is through the pass, so I think the key for them is being able to shut down Deshaun Watson on defense. On the flip side of that, offensively, I think the key to the game for them revolves purely around Jake Coker, because again, you know Derrick Henry's going to get his, right? He's gonna be able to put some points up on the board, especially against that Clemson defense that I think is a little weak in the middle. So I think the key is for Jake Coker to not have one of those games like the Ole Miss game where he threw two interceptions, or the Arkansas game where he threw two interceptions. He can kind of protect the ball and play smart football and utilize, you know, take chances sparingly and make the most of them. I think, you know, that's how Alabama, you know, really works things out here. On the flip side, when we're looking at Clemson, in terms of being able to exploit a weakness, I think the best thing for them to try and do to exploit that weakness is to exploit Alabama's outside linebackers. So essentially, Alabama's great at rushing the quarterback. I think they have 50 sacks this year, which is the most that any team has had in you know, Nick Saban's career. You have two guys with over 10 sacks, which is pretty phenomenal. But the problem is, those outside linebackers are fantastic at rushing the quarterback. They have, you know, a flip side of outside linebackers who are good at stopping the run. They don't have anybody who's great at really being able to spy quarterbacks. It's definitely a weakness. So if I was Clemson, essentially what I would try to do is I wouldn't try to run the ball traditionally with Wayne Gallman. I think that's really kind of a fool's errand. Instead, I think maybe the key for them is to try and run the ball with Deshaun Watson, right? You know, give him a lot of options, run-pass options, things of that nature. And if he can kind of exploit the middle a little bit and open things up there, all of a sudden those safeties that Alabama typically uses to, you know, double-cover receivers play up. You're going to get some one-on-one matchups. And, you know, Alabama's got, you know, their secondary is good, right? But ultimately, you know, Cyrus Jones is only 5'8". On the other side of that, Marlon Humphrey's a great corner, but he's still a freshman. So if you can get one-on-one matchups there, because Alabama's focused on the QB run and they are playing the middle, I think you can find ways to throw the ball downfield. So I think ultimately, if Clemson's going to win the game, that's really what they're going to have to do.
And finally, Mr. Kelly, who is the winner of tonight's college football playoff national championship game from Glendale, Arizona, between Clemson and Alabama?
I think Alabama wins. I mean, granted, I'm incredibly biased. but I think Alabama's going to take this one. It's going to be very close. I think we're looking at like a 2016 game, maybe 23-20. Not a lot of scoring. It's going to be one in the trenches, in the ground. And, yeah, I think it'll be a 3 or 4 point game. They will not cover the spread.
And if Alabama gets the title, you would rank this team in terms of this recent run where?
Oh, that's a great question. I would say the 2019 probably has to stay atop the list just because they're the only team that actually run the table. I would probably put this team hand-in-hand with the 2011 team that beat LSU in the national championship. So this would either be the second-best or third-best team I've seen. And I would mainly point it on the defense, right? So when I look at that 2011 team, that was one of the two best defenses I've seen in Alabama history, this being the other defense. And essentially, they were able to be great doing completely opposite things. That 2011 team, they had Dre Kirkpatrick in corner, who was probably the best corner that Alabama's ever had from just a shutdown, you know, capability. No one would even throw on his side of the field. So because they were able to do that, they were able to really focus on shutting down the run, and it was a great defense. This defense is the opposite. They are able to really pressure the quarterback and, you know, shut teams down that way. And that opens up, you know, their secondary to be able to do some interesting things there. So it's really kind of opposite ways of getting at the same goal. But I thought I would put this team with the 2011 team.
John Kelly, proud and fully admitted Alabama football fan. Any projects you want to alert this listening public to? Anything you want them to go dive into of yours?
Oh, man. I've got a kind of horror flick that we just finished shooting in November in Toronto because my career's on fire, I guess. Everyone loves those Canadian movies. Yes, we have a horror flick we shot in Toronto in November. That's probably hitting the festival circuit, I'd say, late summer. Through the winter of 2016. It'll come out probably Q1 2017. Theatrical in Canada, on demand in iTunes in the US. So I'd say definitely check that out. It's called Tear Us Apart. And right now I'm working on two scripts, one for a company out on the West Coast, and another one for the same company that we just shot the existing project with. They're called Envoy. And that one we're hoping to shoot summer 2017. So. Yeah, I guess, yeah. So see Tear Us Apart when it comes out, you know, like a year from now.
If you ever need a golfer, just call me.
Oh, I will. I will. I will. When I write the sequel to Bagger Vance, I will be giving you a call.
John. John Kelly, thanks as always for coming on Teeing It Up.
Thanks for having me, Jeremy. I appreciate it.
For the record, I think Clemson wins 27-24, 23. That's what I think. But I'm not a college football guy, so not your expert picker. I'm not like the pickers on college game day. Enjoy the National Football Championship game. Enjoy your week. We'll see you Saturday, 11:30 a.m. Eastern Time for the Sunday Sprint on Saturday. And have a good night, everybody. See you.